Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey guys, this is Brett King and welcome back to Breaking Banks. We are the number one global fintech radio show and podcast. My co-host today is my good friend Jim Marus. He's the owner of the Digital Banking Report and a contributor to Forbes and the Financial Brand. In fact, today's show is brought to you by the Financial Brand. TheFinancialBrand.com is an online publication delivering ideas and insights on branding, marketing, and advertising in the retail banking industry. With a razor-sharp focus, The Financial Brand provides strategic analysis on a range of critical brand-building tools, along with real-world examples and practical advice about marketing issues affecting banks and credit unions. It's the number one bank marketing site in the world, with over 1.5 million unique readers in more than 200 countries. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Oh, it's great to be back, Brett. It's also good not to be on the road today, so this is great.
No, it's when's your next trip?
I'm actually taking a week with some family and friends out in Newport Beach, California, and then I take off for the next 7 weeks, I think, starting off in Sundance and going through Austin, Switzerland, Bratislava, Lisbon, Las Vegas, Orlando, New York City, Boston. Yeah, it's quite a round of travels I got coming up.
Amazing. Rocks, the life of a rock star speaker. So it's fantastic. All right, well, listen, let's get to the conference announcements and news. And we got a great show for you guys coming up. We have Tom Blomfield, the CEO and founder of Monzo, ready to join us shortly. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be speaking to Anne Bowden, the CEO and founder of Starling Bank in the UK. So it is UK Challenger Bank Week, obviously. But before we get to that, Jim, have you got a couple of conference announcements for us?
Yeah, I think we have a few things coming up. First off is from September 24th to 27th is Finovate Ball right in New York City. And Breaking Banks is hosting a Power Hour session with JP Nickel, myself, and Brett King on the main stage on September 26th at 4 o'clock. So really looking forward to that. In addition, we on October 9th, as I mentioned, I'm going to be down in Orlando and going to be with JP Nichols again, and we're going to be at BAI Beacon. It's the financial services conference that's designed to take the industry goals and challenges and break them down into very actionable steps that are right for an organization, the team, and other people. And I think what's really nice about that, they really changed the overall conference. But it's really good for all size organizations. There's something for everybody there for sure. Brett, you have a couple things also, I think, overseas.
Yeah, absolutely. So October 25 to 28 is Cybos in Sydney. I'll be down there with the Breaking Banks crew where we'll be recording interviews. And I'll be actually doing the opening keynote for InnerTribe, which is sort of the innovation section of the SWIFT annual conference known as Cybos. Then October 30th and 31st is FinTech Talents conference in the UK. It's billed as the ultimate FinTech festival with 2 days of innovation, collaboration, live tech demos, music, craft beer. Over 2,000 attendees are expected at the event, startups, financial institutions, and academics under a single roof. So go to fintechtalents.com/register, and you've got the Cheeky Bird discount available today. We will have a discount code for you shortly. And while you're there, say hello to our good friend Elizabeth Lumley, Liz Lumley, over at in the UK at FinTech Talents. If you have a conference you would like to share with our audience, hit us up on Twitter at BreakingBanks1 or email us at info@provoke.fm. Now, in the news today, we have Praxia, a new challenger bank launching out of Greece. It's just been announced, and it'll be helmed by the former Barclays investment banking head, Bob Diamond. We have also in the UK another challenger, Oak North, has just announced a successful $100 million raise at a $2.3 billion valuation. So lots of unicorns coming out of the UK proving ground, it would appear. And one last announcement I've got before I hand over to Jim to see if he's got any news, but HSBC is reportedly working on a secret project, well, not so secret now that we're airing it, codenamed Project Iceberg. This is directly in response to the challenger banks we're going to talk to today. Maybe, I think, too little too late for HSBC, but the name behind the project, I guess they're saying they want to be an iceberg to sink the challenger banks, but I don't know, maybe they should have called it Titanic instead. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, you know, we make sure we say it in most conferences that it's better late than never. It's unusual that a rather large bank is as late as they are to the table. But as we said, better late than never, I guess.
Yeah, all right. Well, let's get to our interview for this the first half of the show this week. We're very pleased to invite onto the show the CEO and founder of Monzo, Tom Blomfield. Now, Monzo is billed as a bank that lives on your smartphone, built for the way you live today by solving your problems, treating you fairly, and being totally transparent. They believe they can make banking better. Since we started, we've been busy building the best current account in the world, they say on the website. We now have more than 600 customers using our debit cards to manage their money and spend around the world. So, Tom Blomfield from Monzo, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thanks a lot. I'm delighted to be here.
So, I guess, first of all, let's start with the origin story. How did Monzo come to be? Where did you get the idea for it?
So, I started a company called Go Cardless, which is a direct debit processor here in the UK, or I guess ACH, as you'd call it in the US, which helps small businesses collect money from their customers. And that really taught me how money moved around the system, and kind of figured out that it wasn't as complicated as it seemed. But I really wanted to do something that that actually impacted real people. Go Cardless's customers were other businesses, and it made their back office processing more efficient, and that was a laudable aim, but it wasn't something that really kind of spoke to me. So I really wanted to create something that my friends and family could use.
So when did you start on Monzo? When did you launch it? When did you start putting the team together?
So we were all actually at Starling to start with, which is interesting. You've got Anne on it. I'm sure she'll be happy to talk about it. But we moved on from there and set up Monzo in February 2015. That's when we incorporated the company. And then we launched our first product to customers in about November of that year, back in 2015. And the first product was just a prepaid card. It was really a prototype of a bank. So our intention wasn't ever to kind of market a prepaid card as a standalone financial product. It was more like the fastest way we could prototype a checking account. And so, you know, when you say prepaid card, immediately there's kind of preconceptions of subprime customers or less affluent customers or kids or you know, people who are new to the country kind of spring to mind. And although we certainly have one of those products using our product, it was really targeted at the mainstream. It was just a way to get something launched super fast.
So more of a checkless checking account.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, and so tell us about why the UK. I mean, obviously you're based in the UK, but what makes it attractive for challenger banks? Obviously there's like 40 odd challenger banks already in the UK. Why is it such a good proving ground for new fintech startups in the space?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, it is home for me, and so that's a big part of it. But I do think it's certainly a more receptive regulatory environment than the US currently. By my last count, there are something like 16 or 17 authorized, what people call challenger banks. And most of them are more like Oak North. They're kind of savings and loans companies. So banks that get a license, get a charter to take retail deposits and then deploy those deposits into SMB lending or mortgages. Really, we're quite different, which is, and similarly with Starling, we're kind of retail checking accounts. But I think the regulatory environment in the UK, there's certainly been a political will for the last 10 years or so to increase competition for the benefit of consumers. Really, I think the government and the regulators realized that the consumers were getting a raw deal because there's massive consolidation in the UK, you know, only really 9 or 10 big banks, and the top five has something like 80% market share. So the government and the regulators really wanted to create more competition in the interest of consumers. And so it started this kind of new banks process of chartering new banks. Having said that, people say, "Oh, it's easy to start a bank in the UK." That is not the case. I mean, it used to be impossible, and now it is just very, very hard. You compare it with someone like the US, where until actually yesterday, I think the charter process was kind of on hold. I don't think there's been any, maybe one new bank in the last 10 years chartered in the US. Actually, Varo Money got their conditional charter approved by the OCC yesterday, I believe.
Yeah, well, we were we started that process, you know, obviously as Moving back in 2012, speaking to the regulators, and they were pretty clear that the only way we were going to get a charter was to acquire a bank. But of course, the OCC charter that has emerged is fairly new out of the blocks.
Yeah, well, so there are two separate things going on. The OCC are the chartering body for the full federal kind of standard national bank charter. That is the traditional one that's been around for decades, and that is the one Barrow has got. There's talk of a separate special fintech charter, which never really got anywhere. I think a lot of the state regulators ended up suing the OCC to try and put a hold on that. I think what Barrow Money has been conditionally granted is the full traditional national
bank charter. Correct. Yeah. But you're right, it's been very very little activity on that front compared with the UK.
Yeah, it's just been, and it's not because people haven't tried. I think there's just been, the situation in the US is the opposite, where I think there are something like 4,500 or 5,000 banks and another 5,000 or 6,000 credit unions. And so the regulators are seeing this massive long tail of small banks and seeing it as a real risk, whereas the UK only has 9 or 10 or 12 or whatever and sees that consolidation as a risk. So each regulator is responding to the unique challenges in its own jurisdiction.
So tell me more about the thesis. Sorry, go ahead, Jim.
No, I was just going to say, Tom, as we did some research on Monzo, and we published, Brett said, an article yesterday about Monzo and what makes it different. One of the things that stands out is not only that you went and got a banking license, which is by no means easy, and you've had it for a bit more than a year now, but you're now starting to get some traction as far as number of customers and even from the standpoint of better traction with regards to engagement. But what really stood out was really the level of overall unequal transparency, so as it will. You have a blog that sometimes has a couple entries a day that reveals not only what your plans are, but how well you do against them. I think in the last quarter, you reached 11 of your 14 published goals, which is just unheard of in the banking industry. I mean, we don't know if somebody's accomplished anything, even after they've accomplished it in many cases. But you really take a proactive approach to transparency. Has that helped in the acquisition of customers?
Yeah, enormously. So even on the front page of our website, we list a live counter of our customer numbers. We're up to, today it's 950,000 checking account customers. And that transparency is sort of multifaceted. So absolutely, we're publishing on our blog. We have, when things go wrong, we alert customers in the app. I've just this evening in the UK come from a community event in our office where we had 300 customers come to our office and kind of grill me for like 45 minutes about our plans. And I think it's sort of our answer to the trust problem. So for a customer to hand over their life savings or their salary, there's a really high trust bar. And the way that the banks have traditionally got around that is by having big branches with kind of columns outside and national advertising campaigns and really kind of spending money to build that trust. And that's not a luxury we had. We don't have a ton of money. And so instead we thought, what is our kind of advantage over the banks? What can we do that they can't? And transparency is the answer. So just being radically transparent is a way of engendering trust amongst customers and internally with our staff. But people sort of start to question and doubt what they don't understand. And by kind of shining a light on our decision-making process, it shows people we're just human. And that doesn't mean we never make mistakes. At least when we do make mistakes, it's obvious that it's through incompetence and not malice. You know, we're not bad people. And so I think that just helps build a level of trust and accountability that people really, really love, and has helped us acquire those almost 1 million customers without spending on acquisition marketing.
Well, I think one other thing that I saw, that transparency also becomes clear, that one of the challenges in trust for the traditional banks is a consumer may trust it to hold their money, but they're not always as trustful of the fact that you're willing to, that you're actually out there for them. The yeah. consumer believes that, you know, you most banks pretty much have their own interests in mind, that they don't treat them like a family member. And as you go through not only your blog and your Making Monzo site, but when you also look at the enhancements you've brought to Monzo in the last year and a half, they're really proactively on the customer's behalf. I mean, you brought I think 4 or 5 different new savings tools. You opened up the ability to open a Monzo account to younger people than the traditional 18-year-old. You've brought enhanced bill payment. There's just a lot of things that you've added. And every time you add something, I believe, it adds to the overall trust that you're really out there to try to help the customer. And I would imagine that showed itself in the number of customers you're generating, at least from a kick the tires perspective.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that I think there's been a lot of literature on this over the last 4 or 5 years, the kind of jobs to be done movement. And I think the big banks often suffer from this problem that they're really siloed along product lines. And that might be mortgages or credit cards or certificates of deposit, whatever it is. And each person in a bank belongs to one of these silos, and they think about optimizing the P&L of that product to make more revenue for the bank. I talked to a lady.
Not the overall customer experience, yeah.
Yeah, like whose job is it in the bank to like make the customer's life easier? And, you know, that's not a job. That's not a financial product, and so no one's thinking about it. Whereas we started Monzo with that core goal, right? It was personal frustration that my current account, my checking account, doesn't work for me and doesn't work for my friends, my family. So let's do something about that. Let's make a service that puts the human at the center, not the financial product at the center. The financial product's an afterthought. Like, it's an implementation detail. It doesn't really matter. What matters is these dozens and dozens of interactions that you have with your money, and whether they hurt or whether they simply just work. So it's, people sometimes ask us, investors, kind of, they ask, like, what is the hook? What's the they're looking for a silver bullet, almost a financial product. You know, with Robinhood, it's free stock trading. What is Monzo's silver bullet? And the answer is there's no silver bullet. It's just 100 different interactions that are, instead of being painful, are delightful. And so it's 100 lead bullets that add up to an overwhelmingly better experience.
So in respect to sort of the design thesis, you know, what role do you see the bank account playing in people's lives through the technology developing, you know, as it moves forward?
That's a great question. I think that's absolutely core to what we're doing. We're not trying to build a full service traditional bank in any sense. We're not planning to do Monzo mortgages or Monzo savings accounts. What we are trying to do is be a financial hub, something that lives at the center of your financial life and makes everything easier, gives you visibility and control without you having to go to a ton of effort to kind of put the customer in control and reduce stress and anxiety. So all the dozens of different pieces of admin, you know, chores you have to do to stay on top of your money, whether submitting a tax return or switching your cell phone provider every 12 or 24 months to get the best deal or making sure you're on the best insurance deal. It's all of those bits of work that no one loves doing, right? No one gets up in the morning because they really want to switch their mortgage provider. I guess in the UK, we have 3-year mortgage terms. I guess in the US, you're more like fixed for life. But in any case, right, there are sort of a dozen or 15 different services that suck. And so what we want to do is, rather than build a full-service bank, build a financial hub that automates all of that crap in your life to give you back time and money, make your life simpler. That's the ultimate long-term goal.
So, you know, what are the tools? Sorry, go ahead, Jim. You go.
No, go ahead. Go ahead, Brett. You're good.
But no, I was going to say, you know, what are the tools you're building that contribute? Because I'm really interested in this, obviously, with the design thesis behind Movin. But how do you work on improving your customers' financial well-being?
I think it starts with understanding your customer. So there's no singular answer. So one small example recently, we introduced gambling self-exclusion so that customers who have a gambling problem or, you know, who are just worried about gambling too much are able to exclude themselves from spending in casinos or betting shops. And so that's a small, you know, the implementation was only a few days, but it's that has the potential to change people's lives. They're able to turn off gambling, and then to re-enable it, they have to talk to customer service and wait for a cooling off period. And actually, it's these small nudges seem to have massive effects for people's lives. And so it starts with understanding your customer and whether that person is someone who has savings to invest in savings accounts or investments, or someone who needs to borrow, or someone who's looking to buy a home. I think it all just has to start with understanding your customer.
You know, Tom, you one of the newer features you have is the ability for a customer to actually customize their engagement through if that, then that, or if this, then that.
Yep.
And
yep.
What have you seen from the customer's perspective on things that they've done that are really unique that you may even take? I know you have a way to have people look at some of the things that you guys have already pre-developed. What are some of the things you've seen the customer develop that you say, man, we never thought about that? That is a really neat way of integrating different components of a person's life.
There are so many. One of my favorite ones is every time, if I spend money at an airline, then put money into a charity that plants trees, basically offset my carbon emissions. So that's, I thought that was a really neat one. Or if the temperature gets over like 95 Fahrenheit or 30 degrees, put money into my ice cream fund for my kids. So there's just a ton of really fun little ones. But
I don't have an ice cream fund for my kids. I'm going to have to think about investing in ice cream, I hear.
I think most of the really good ones around budgeting, sort of the month-to-month salary cycle doesn't, I think it's kind of been forced on us. I think a lot of people think more, actually week to week. So people kind of want to take their salary away from themselves and then pay themselves a weekly allowance to kind of stay on track. It's kind of interesting.
I did see something in the news, actually, is quite interesting, that the UK is looking at being able to, for customers to be able to request when they get a bill from a service provider. You know, all this sort of stuff, I think, will change pretty dramatically with artificial intelligence, as we have agents managing, you know, AI agents managing our bills and things like that. But it's interesting to contemplate that. So tell me a bit more, Tom, about your team. You know, how many people have you got in the team right now? I know you're in the midst of a funding round, so you probably can't talk about that, but give us a little bit of a picture of the health and the growth of the business.
Sure. So we're just about to hit 1 million customers here in the UK. The team is about 350, mostly in London. We have a couple of satellite offices as well. We've just moved into a new office in London kind of a couple of weeks ago. It's Bloomberg's old office in central London. So we should be able to scale to kind of 500-700 people there, and we've had three new senior team members join. That's, I think we're announcing that in the next few days. I'm very excited about them joining.
And how much of the original team is still with you?
Oh, of the
founding team. You know, the guys that were there when you opened the doors when you started.
Yeah, there were 12, or I think there were 13 of us in February 2015. And of those 13, I think 9 or 10 are still around. So you pretty good, good solid core team there. Some of them are doing totally, totally different stuff. So Leah, who was our first customer service person, I went to university with her. She just married one of my co-founders. So she started out running the customer service team. Now she's running our people and recruitment team. So some people are doing different things. Tristan, who was our first marketing intern, is now our head of marketing. So he's doing great as well.
Fantastic. Now, Jim, what else came out in the report you did recently?
Well, as far as the article was concerned, I think one of the things that also came out was that overall, Monzo goes incrementally and continues to set new goals. Everything from the instant updates as far as money management, but more than anything else, I think what they've shown is that there's a lot of small victories that make a customer's relationship that much stronger. And one of the things I saw, Tom, was that, as I mentioned earlier, your number of customers that are coming on board are certainly increasing and have every month. And I know you have a goal a couple of years out of about 4 million customers. You're quickly approaching 1 million customers, which is very admirable and starts to get scale. What are some of the ways besides just product enhancement that you're looking at to try to increase engagement and awareness, and also probably most importantly, on a very basic level, the depositing of paychecks to the account to make it the primary hub as opposed to
because you've often spoken about that fact that, you know, a lot of people try before they buy in terms of they try it out as sort of their day-to-day payment account, but they're still getting their salary going through to an RBS or Lloyd's or something. So how do you switch that behavior?
Yeah, for sure. So in terms of the stats, we're signing up about 20,000 new current accounts a week at the moment. So that adds up to just over 1 million a year, which is the fastest growing bank in the UK. I think Nationwide opens a second number of current accounts on about 900,000 a year. So I think we're pretty happy with the growth so far, but getting the checking account, you know, so the primary checking account with the salary is, we're in two minds about this. Something like 23 or 24% of our active customers currently put their salary in. So we're pretty happy with that. A year ago, we didn't offer a checking account at all. So to go from zero to almost a quarter of our active customers putting their salaries in is, we're pretty happy. And that come back in a year or two's time, I'm sure that number will be higher. But even more kind of longer term, we're not trying to build a big balance sheet. We have nothing productive to do with the deposits. Most of it just sits in the Bank of England in an overnight, you know, equivalent of the Fed, earning not very much money. And so we don't necessarily want to be the place you put your salary or your savings. We want to be the first place you go to check your money. And so open banking in the UK is really interesting because it allows Monzo to be the primary interface. Even if your salary is deposited into RBS and your mortgage is with HSBC, you can still visualize and crucially control all of that money from within Monzo.
So you sort of become an aggregator of their net worth, of all their financial assets, right?
Absolutely right, yeah. And it's not something we're not very well progressed on that yet, but that's certainly building towards this vision of being a financial hub.
Okay, so Tom, you know, we've got about a minute and a half left before we have to go to break, but, you know, tell us, how do people get in touch with Monzo, and, you know, how do they find out more about what you guys are doing?
Well, you can visit our website, monzo.com. We are at Monzo on Twitter, or go to the iOS App Store or the Google Play Store and download the Monzo app to check it out in the UK only for the moment.
Cool. And just very quickly, why did you change the name from Monzo, from the original name, rather?
We were called Mondo. We got sued.
Oh, there you go. Was that from Mondo Rock, the rock band?
It was not. It was not. It was another company with similar.
All right, that's fine. Well, we don't have to talk about that. We don't have to. But that's so. I was just wondering if there was a backstory. I mean, we had our own, obviously, going from Movin Bank to Movin in the US, so similar. But hey, Tom, look, thanks very much for coming on the show today. Keep us abreast of your funding announcements when they happen, so we can get you back on to talk about that.
Yeah, it's been great to chat. Thanks a lot, guys.
No worries. And Jim, thanks for helping me co-host. We're just going to go to break now, but we got Anne Bowden from Starling after the break. I pre-recorded an interview with her earlier in the week. But Jim, keep well, and we'll speak to you soon.
You too. It'll be great to hear from Anne as well. There's two great success stories from the UK.
Absolutely. This is UK Challenger Bank Week at Breaking Banks. We'll be right back after this break. Hey guys, you know I travel a lot. This year I'm going to do about 30 countries associated with the Bank 4.0 release. I'm not the greatest at managing my travel schedule. I do try to get to the airport early, but when you're traveling from New York City out to JFK, sometimes the traffic is going to be a problem. Then you get out there, like I did today at Terminal 4 at JFK, and the lines at the security at TSA were insane. But that's why I'm excited about our newest sponsor, Clear. You never have to run to your gate again. Clear helps you get through security with a tap of your fingers. You don't need your physical ID card or your passport. You just use your eyes and your fingerprints to get through security. It uses biometric identification. You go through the line. You have a special line through Clear. You go and identify yourself using biometrics, and then you're rushed straight to the front of the line through security to get straight through. So it literally saved me probably 30 or 40 minutes today. It's very easy to sign up. You can create your account online before going to the airport. Once you get to the airport, you have to contact a Clear ambassador to register yourself with the ID, the biometrics, and then you can use it right there. And it's not just at airports either. It's also being used at stadiums around the United States, with more places being added every day. And, when I recently Katie and I were traveling, I enrolled her. So you can have a family plan. Up to 3 family members can be added at a discount rate, and kids under 18 are free. So Clear is the absolute best way to get through airport security today if you are traveling through the US. It works great with PreCheck too. Right now, listeners of Breaking Banks can get their first 2 months of Clear for free. Go to clearme.com/fintech and use the code fintech. That's clearme.com/fintech. And that's your code for free 2 months of Clear.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit facebook.com/Voice America.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
And welcome back from the break. I am Brett King. You're listening to Breaking Banks. This week's show is brought to you by Source Media. They enable professionals in dynamic communities that drive the global economy. They've got over 2 million qualified and engaged professionals in their subscriber database. So we're very pleased to have Source Media as an official media partner for Breaking Banks and a distribution channel for our podcast as well. Now, earlier in the week, I had the chance to chat with Anne Bowden, the CEO and founder of Starling Bank, to get an update from her in respect to what's happening, not just with the UK Challenger Bank scene more generally, but in specific to the growth at Starling and their efforts to raise some more financing. So this week, as we continue our discovery of what's happening in the Challenger Bank world out there, it's indeed a pleasure for me to have Anne Bowden from Starling back on Breaking Banks. Anne, thanks for joining us all the way from the United Kingdom.
Hi, Brett.
What do we still call it the United Kingdom?
I think we do. We are suffering from the Brexit problems at present, but we are very positive, and whatever happens is not going to get us down at all in the UK.
No, absolutely. All right. So, one of the things that is, of course, interesting to sort of think about is the sort of structural changes that's happening around markets and so forth. And obviously, the shift towards challenger banks, we are starting to see quite a bit of traction in the UK. Some of the challenger banks like yourselves, Monzo, Revolut, really, really getting some traction. So tell me, first of all, give us an update of where Starling is at.
Yeah, well, we're sort of 4 years into our journey now, and things are really very, very exciting. We have a quite a powerful retail consumer business. We are doing well on our business accounts, and these are our really B2C offerings. We also have a marketplace which is up and running, where we provide insurance, loyalty, asset management, wealth management products, mortgages, to the same customer base. And because we built our technology from scratch and we have direct access into payment schemes, and we've opened up our infrastructure to other fintechs, other banks, and other organizations. And those businesses are really feeding from each other. Each gives something to the other in some sort of way. We are very proud in that we are now offering our infrastructure services, our banking as a service, our platform services to large organizations and fintechs. We recently talked about our RBS proposition.
I saw that announcement. So you guys are, obviously RBS as an incumbent in the market, has fallen a little behind in terms of particularly, CX, the user experience, but even on things like, we see TransferWise has taken a dent out of their, overseas transfer business and stuff like that. So why would, what's the benefit in RBS partnering with a challenger like yourselves?
The relationship with RBS is very simple. They are simply a customer of ours, a client of ours for Starling Payment Services. We have built out an infrastructure, provide state-of-the-art access into payment schemes, and RBS are going to be a customer of that service.
So you're not a payment processor as such, but it's sort of like you become a payment gateway. I'm trying to understand the type of payments they'll be doing.
Yeah, we are providing the payment infrastructure to Faster Payments and other services.
Okay, Faster Payments.
Yeah, they're slightly broader than that, and they're a customer, and I will be very, very proud to help them in the next stage of their project.
So how did that come about, that partnership with RBS? Because, obviously there's a lot of talk right now about, there's sort of the two streams of thought. One is, these challenger, fintech startups are going to take over the world. But the other very pragmatic view, and I think you and I share this, is that, part of the way that the industry will evolve is through collaboration between fintechs and incumbents. I know from our own personal experience at MoveIn that it's not always easy to get a meeting of the minds and get these things hashed out. So it's quite an achievement for, getting a significant bank like RBS partnering. How did it come about?
The relationship is very simple. I have a long history of providing payment services to other organizations. I was a transaction banker by profession, and transaction banking is all about providing cash management, payment services, and FX services to other organizations, whether they are corporates, whether they are banks or fintechs. So all the banks provide these services to other banks and other organizations. We are simply providing that service, but to a totally different level, with a fully functional API. We have other contracts with other big fintechs. We have contracts with the Department of Work and Pension. So what we are providing is a service to access payment infrastructure to banks, fintechs, corporates, and governments. And the service we provide is a plug-and-play service. It's available through an API. It has a full suite of testing services and sandbox services. We are providing banking as an API, banking as a service. The first bank, I think, to start doing this in a very, very predictable, low-cost and high-quality way. We've recently announced our partnership with Raisin. Raisin are the organization that provides deposit services to individuals. We are providing a banking as a platform service to them.
So tell me generally about how the B2C side is going, the consumer side of the business. You've had some considerable growth, but can you talk about that in a bit more specificity?
Yeah, our consumer business is doing very well. We've got something like 220,000 accounts, and those accounts have very high balances compared to a lot of our competitors. People are using those accounts for their routine banking. We've won the best banking app in various surveys. Our customers love us, and we some time ago we won the Best British Bank Award. So we have a great app, we have great service, and we are providing it, competing against the incumbent banks on a very, very engaging app. Because we have built this consumer proposition, we've now extended it to the small business world, and we have that business has grown very, very fast, where we're providing business banking services to small customers, small businesses.
Is it sort of like a gigging economy workers, that sort of stuff? So, you know, the retail account looks similar, or is it actually a proper small business bank account?
It does absolutely everything you would possibly need from a big bank, but it's on your smartphone. And we combine that with the payment services that we offer larger institutions to give quite an experience, which is quite engaging, but it's very much for small businesses at present. In the UK, there's a fund being set up called the Capability Fund, the SME Capability Fund, which was set up post-crisis, 2008 crisis, in order to encourage more banks to compete in the SME sector. And we are competing for an award from that fund, and we very much hope to be awarded 120 million in early February next year.
Wow. So that'll keep you funded for a little while. tell me about how big the team is right now, and where are you physically based as a team?
We're about 230-240 people.
That's quite sizable.
Yeah, in Broadgate, in the near Liverpool Street Station in the city, and we are based in a building that many years ago was occupied by UBS. And the ironic thing is that I worked in UBS in this complex in the early 90s. So I've gone full circle. I was here working for a big bank in this building 20 years ago, and now 20 years later, we have a very new fintech, very entrepreneurial organization delivering new services to the banking sector in the UK.
Now, you talk about the fact that the customers, use your account as a daily on a daily basis often. One of the things that there's some debate over in the UK is the switching. And measuring switching of accounts. But of course, there is a formal switching, a bank switching process that has been implemented in the UK. But we're also seeing a lot of people try out the digital challenges. They might get their salary paid into a mainstream bank, but then their day-to-day spending is shifting over to the challenger. But do you feel that challenger banks in the UK are ready for prime time yet, where people can see them as a replacement for a traditional bank account provided by one of the incumbents?
I think the majority of our customers try us out and they use our account for a couple of months and then they consider moving more and more of their business to us. We have a number of customers who use us as their sole account, and they have switched from an incumbent using the switching screen. We have, but the majority of customers are using us in a multi-bank environment, mostly for transactions where they really need to rely upon their bank to really get it done in time in a reliable manner.
So one of your differentiations is, for want of a better word, low latency, low friction engagement, yeah?
Yeah. So if you're the sort of person that wants to make payments from their smartphone and know very well that it's arrived at their destination, if you want instant notifications, if you want all those tools at your fingertips to manage low value and high value payments, Starling is the sort of bank you use. We have international payments on your smartphone. We have, of course, a whole range of MasterCard payments together with faster payments and other payment services. So it's a very reliable, very, sort of reliable experience using the Starling app.
And of course, the other aspect of this is that you were one of the first banks to do, in Challenger or otherwise in the UK, to do complete digital onboarding, where you didn't require a two-step process, right?
Yeah. So we, you know, people sign up for the accounts and get an account in 3 to 4 minutes. They automatically get a MasterCard provisioned either to Apple Pay or Google Play. So people can basically say, I want a Starling account, do a self.
They can fund the account.
And they can be up and running and using it within, 3 to 4 minutes, which is very, very empowering for the customer.
Yeah. So tell me a bit more about how you're growing the customer base. You know, what are the mechanisms you're using? How do you acquire customers? Is it predominantly sort of digital, targeting millennials? Where's the growth coming from?
I think it's very, very different from what I expected when I started this endeavor 4 years ago. People kept asking me what would the cost be of acquiring a customer, how we were going to target customers. Customers come through us by referral, and the majority of customers hear about us, from a friend or a family member. They've perhaps seen us in the press. They may be used to us from seeing an article about us somewhere. And when referred by a friend, they download the app and they get a great, great experience and they continue to use us. It's very, very different from a traditional, heavy brand advertising. Yeah. It is a very different sort of acquisition experience for the customer. And one of the things we find is that our customers think Starling is a bank which is all about their immediate environment. So we have high net worth customers and we have people on very low incomes. And they think Starling's for them because they've been told by a friend that's getting a great experience from the bank.
So for those that don't know the story, how did you come up with the name Starling?
Yeah, well, Starling started off as being me taking quite an analytical approach to searching through lots of different names and figuring out which one was going to be good for Starling. And we came across Starling and we looked at a description of the bird and what it's like. And to be honest, it really sort of resonated with us. They're quite collegiate. They go around, with each other. They're quite chatty. They don't take no for an answer. And I think that's all about Starling. We are going to be heard. We want to be able to make things better for our customers. And we're quite persistent in getting it done.
When you talk about that sort of mission of making life better for your customers, in terms of the app and how you built out the app, what do you do within the ecosystem for a customer that contributes overall to, their financial well-being?
Yeah, we know very well that we can't provide all the services to all the customers. And we believe that we are part of an ecosystem supporting the customers with our friends, the friends that the fintechs that are very, very popular here in London at the moment. So we have a marketplace, and this marketplace is where we offer other services to our customers: mortgages, loyalty products, wealth products, the pension products. And we consume the APIs of these other fintechs, and these other fintechs, these financial fintechs, consume our APIs, and we have a very seamless sort of connectivity in our marketplace, whereby people can sign up for a pension B, for example, that consolidates their pensions. They can take out a mortgage with Habito. They can actually use various wealth management products such as Wealth Simple and Wealthify. So these particular products provide the whole suite of services our customers need and are integrated into their life and into the app in a seamless way.
So it's like sort of what we call a rebundling of all these different fintech services into something that looks or operates at least more like a traditional bank that's would call themselves a full service or universal bank, right?
But we're not white labeling these products. These products are in our marketplace under that brand. So, for example, the important thing is that people know very well who they're actually dealing with, and the products are linked together and can separate if people change their relationships. For example, we collect lots of information about transactions from the transactional information we get from the merchants and from the schemes and from how people conduct their daily lives. We use that information to give customers insight. And we can then use that information to surface the right products for our customers. And these products will be under the brand of that particular financial institution. We can then pre-select. We've already done the various KYC processes on those particular customers, and we can help the onboarding of that customer onto this particular fintech very, very easily. And of course, we can continue to integrate the two products and give the customer a consolidated picture of their finances.
Okay, great. So tell me about where you're at in terms of your funding and so forth. You did talk about the fact that you've got this, you've made a play for this $120 million that came out of the whole Williams and Glynn thing and the government decision to support fintechs out of that. But tell me, you know, what else you're doing in terms of the funding side of things.
Yeah, well, the important thing about this is that this is will give us the opportunity to make a real impact on the small medium businesses in the UK. And we're heading towards, you know, building a 6% market share. We will be hoping to get this grant funding from the scheme, and we will be backing it up with funding that we are raising for our regulatory capital. So it's quite a complex story, but we are very, very ambitious in pulling together the plans, which will make us a significant player in the SME banking arena in you know, in the next couple of years.
So, why 6% as a target?
Yeah, I think we wanted to. Starling is quite pragmatic in that we like to exceed expectations. If anybody actually talks about us, they probably talk about us as an organization that is all about execution, it's all about exceeding our targets. And 6% is something where we make a sizable difference in the market share in the UK, and very much hope we can succeed in exceeding it in the next couple of years.
So if you're meeting a customer on the street and, you know, or someone that says, "Oh, you're Anne Bowden from Starling. Why should I bank with you?" You know, what's your typical response?
Yeah, you know, people, you know, well, first of all, say that we are very fair and transparent. People, you know, find that the whole new banking sort of movement is very refreshing. I think that there are a number of banks in the UK at the moment and in Europe that are doing something new and different and interesting for customers. And then people want to choose between those banks. And we all do something slightly different. Starling is very rich in functionality and has a marketplace and does business for people running, you know, small businesses. So people will come to us because of the mixture of products we're offering. When you compare us against the traditional banks, well, we offer everything they do. But we have a much better app experience. We're cheaper, and we're always here for our customers.
So I want to just, you know, as we finish up, I just want to drill down on that a little bit. Because, you know, when you know, Moovin started here in the US, of course, Simple was getting you know, quite a bit of traction. And the question was always about how Simple and Moovin competed, but the reality was because you know, most of the customers coming to us were looking to choose us over a traditional, you know, incumbent bank in the United States. We rarely competed, and we saw ourselves as part of the same you know, team, you know, batting for the customer in terms of making banking better. Now, in the UK, it's a little, and Europe, it's a little different situation because there's so many challenger banks now. So do you feel like you have to compete in and differentiate against other competitors? Or for now, is it mostly about the fact that people have choice and they're choosing challengers over incumbents?
I think there are a number of new entrants on the market, but there are very, very few people with overlapping offerings. We provide current account banking. We have a banking license. Our deposits are guaranteed by the Financial Services Compensation Scheme. We do lending, and we provide a full suite of services to retail banks and small businesses. There are very, very few of those. I think there's one other providing current accounts to retailers. Other banks, other new entrants have gone for different sorts of market positioning. Doing current account banking in the UK, checking accounting, account banking is very difficult. And very few people have actually entered that space. But the ones that are really actually managing to define the market and give customers a whole new experience.
Cool. Well, Anne, thank you very much for joining us on Breaking Banks today. Just, you know, if someone wants to find out more about Starling, where do they go?
Starlingbank.com. And there's lots of information up there. And please get in touch. And we'd love to talk about what we're doing. And we definitely want to talk to lots of those fintechs and banks there around the world who want some endpoints into Europe, because we're really, really keen on building our banking as a service offering.
Well, you know, we're going to talk to you. I'll put you in touch with some guys down in Australia, and let's build this global challenger bank network. It sounds very interesting, right?
Right. Fantastic.
Absolutely. Well, Anne, thanks again for joining us.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, for more of the latest in fintech news.